Welcome to the Holistic Icon Podcast, hosted by Dr. Nisha Chellam, a board-certified internist and holistic medicine specialist who understands the science of disease and the art of healing. Every week, Dr. Nisha gives you tips on how to take control of your health, because you are your best doctor. Here's your host and author of Transform Your Thyroid, Dr. Nisha Chellam.
Hey guys, Dr. Chellam again, presenting you yet another podcast from Holistic Icon. Now, in this podcast, I actually have done something different. I have interviewed a very interesting guest, Kevin Ballister, who had a very significant traumatic brain injury. And one of the reasons I wanted to interview Kevin is his story is very remarkable in that as a patient, having encountered such a devastating injury, his whole journey of taking health into his own hands, taking responsibility of his recovery process, what a huge difference it has made in his whole recovery. And as many of you who have encountered our practice, worked with us, you know I'm a big fan of patient-led practices where the patient leads their own care, because as physicians, we are able to look at a specific condition. We do personalize care for our patients. However, it's extremely important that the patient is aware of what they are able to do and what they should be doing in order to get the best and the most optimal health. And Kevin's story, I think, really epitomizes this journey where he leads his own care. So I think you will find this very interesting. As always, make sure you download this podcast from iTunes. I have included show notes where I will link to Kevin's book and his website. And always visit us at holisticicon.com, our website, where I will have this podcast also uploaded. We are changing our website, so it's going to be all available there. Remember to give us a good review if you like all the information we put out. And if you feel that something could be improved, we certainly would love to hear that too. So without any further delay, here is Kevin Ballister.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon, Dr. Chellam and Marina. And today is our very special guest. We have Kevin. Kevin, pronounce your last name for me.
Ballister.
You know, the way I pronounce everything, I would probably emphasize every letter in that.
Ballister.
You know,
it is time.
Right. So Kevin is a very interesting story. And one of the reasons that I came across Kevin is I had a patient of mine who had a traumatic, a motor vehicle accident that led to a stroke because she had an injury to her carotid artery. And I was looking, I put a message to our functional medical practitioners group, our functional medical doctors, not even practitioners, actually doctors group, and said, hey, I have this patient. I want to make sure I'm getting her on the right supplements. I'm getting her. She's really good with the nutrition part. Can you just let me know if there's any protocol? And they said, oh, well, you need to see Feed Your Brain and look at Kevin's story. And that's how I came across your website, just in case you didn't know how I found you. And what I found very interesting is here's a group of a very intelligent and a great group of physicians who think so highly of you. And I felt, well, this is a story that probably all patients need to know. And, your whole story was very inspiring. So, without any further delay, what I'm going to have you do is tell us how you got to be well-known among functional medical doctors in the world of brain health. Why don't you tell us as how your story started? I know that's a very broad question.
Well, first of all, I didn't know that's how you found me, and that's powerful. I really appreciate that. And working with functional nutrition, functional medicine has been what I have been doing since my injury. So let's rewind back to 2011 when I sustained a severe traumatic brain injury. And I was instantly unconscious. I was rushed to the hospital, put on life support. And while I was in a coma, my mother was told that I had less than a 10% chance of ever waking. She was told that if I did wake up, I would likely remain in a persistent vegetative state. So I'm very, very fortunate to be here. And I hold that in my mind every single day. I'm like, wake up. I'm like, yes, I'm on the right side of the dirt. That's a win right there. But
Kevin, before you go into that, can you tell me what exactly was the injury? Like how much of your brain was affected by this accident?
Mm. Yeah, so most of it was damage to my corpus callosum, which networks the left and right. It's mostly white matter, mostly axon. So it was mostly axonal damage, hence diffuse axonal injury. And diffuse means spread.
Spread around, yeah.
Axonal is the axons. And what happens with this injury is it often triggers a chemical cascade, specifically calcium cascade, that ends up killing neurons all around. And that's where it often results in persistent unconsciousness, and it definitely often leaves long-lasting effects after. Additionally, while I was in a coma, they did a brain scan, and the first scan didn't show the extent of my brain injury. And so the neurologist was like, well, there's nothing on the scan that should prevent him from waking. And mind you, it had subdural hematoma, bruised right frontal cortex, and I had severely battered and like organs were screwed up, cracked ribs, a lacerated left kidney. But yeah, as far as my brain goes, most importantly is the bruised frontal and temporal lobes. Plus the subdural hematoma, and that's what the CT scan could see.
So the subdural hematoma is which part of your brain?
So subdural is, so you have membranes that encapsulate your brain.
Right.
And one of them is the dura mater.
Yes.
So it's below the dura mater, and it's a gathering of blood in that area between... Yep. Like
the brain
that holds your brain, you know? So it basically means my brain is bleeding and it's gathered around my brain in different places.
Right.
So the neurologist looked at the scans and said, okay, but there is nothing on here that should prevent him from waking.
Right.
So he tried to encourage me to breathe on my own because I was not breathing on my own at that point. I was hooked up to a ventilator that pumped air in and out of my incapable lungs. And he wanted to encourage me to breathe on his own, So he made the call to reduce the amount of oxygen that I was being supplied so that I would attempt to breathe on my own.
Yeah.
My involuntary reaction to the reduction of oxygen was to bite down as hard as I could on the tube that supplied my lungs with oxygen. So that stopped all oxygen from getting to my lungs. And my blood oxygen saturated to 60%. And the medical reports before this say that I was moving all four extremities. And they note that I'm no longer moving the left side of my body.
Okay.
So it wasn't diagnosed, but it's pretty clear that I had hypoxic stroke at that point. So hearing about your patient who also had a stroke, and what happens there is lack of blood flow to the brain as a result, and that causes damage in just seconds or minutes.
Got it. You know? Got it. So soon after they, so at that point in time did they have to, at which point did they decide, well, the ventilation is not going to help? Did they at any time talk to your family about removing life support, or did they just continue to persist?
So what happened afterward is the neurologist came in after they attempted to reduce the oxygen. He came into where my mother was, and he said, well, no. The event happened, and then he had a scan done because clearly they weren't seeing the whole picture.
Right, right.
I wasn't waking. And so an MRI was done, and the MRI showed the axonal damage. Mm-hmm. And the neurologist came into the room where my mom was and said, well, we know why he won't wake. He has a severe diffuse axonal injury.
Wow.
My mom's like, what's that? And apparently the neurologist just shrugged his shoulders and said, you get what you get, and closed my case with neurology. So my family did what anybody would do, and they consulted Google.
Yeah, of course.
And if you go on Google and you type in diffuse axonal injury, you're going to get source after source after source. And they all say 90% never wake up. And of the 10% that do, most of them are in a vegetative state. Mm. So closed my case with neurology. I can't say my mom was ever told to pull the plug on life support. Mm-hmm. Typically, they give more time than the 12 days that I was in. So it was always hopeful. My mom, I was a musician before my injury. I'm still a musician, as you see.
Right.
And my mom knew how much music meant to me.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my mom taught me how to play the first song I ever played on guitar, which was Blackbird by the Beatles. And while I was in a coma, she had one of my guitars brought to the hospital, and she would play for me every night while I was in a coma. She would sing, "Take These Broken Wings and Learn to Fly." And on the 12th night, I woke up. And I have no memory of waking. And I've seen videos of me awake during this time, but I woke. And then I developed breathing problems about a week later. And I was put into an induced coma while they scoped my trachea and saw that my trachea had occluded down to the size of a drinking straw. So it had swollen up down to that big. And that would explain why before they decided to put me in a induced coma. Actually, can I tell that story? You have a...
Yeah.
Good physician audience, and I'd love to tell the story. So before they put me in induced coma, I was in ER or not ER, a step down unit, I suppose.
I see you step down.
Right. At that point, and I was having trouble breathing. I was breathing like that.
Yeah.
I was gasping for air and like crawling up the walls, telling my mom something's not right. And mind you, I have no memory of this. This is from accounts that I've heard. And I'm like, something's not right. And so the nurse called the resident, the resident, and was like, something's wrong with this patient. You know, we need you to come up. And he would send residents up to check on me. And they kept on going, they'd check my levels, my blood pressure, that sort. And be like, yeah, you're fine. It must be psychiatric. Like, you just need to calm down. You're being very anxious. And, looking back at it, if you couldn't breathe, you'd be pretty anxious.
Right. No kidding. It's so, like drowning. It's exactly like drowning. You exactly. panic.
Yeah. It definitely triggers some anxiety.
Yes.
So we kept on sending people up, sending residents up, and they kept on saying, You just need to calm down. And finally, he happened to walk by my room and take a look at me and see that. And he called all his residents over and made the teaching moment. And he was like, what do you see here?
That's right.
I'm going to this. And they're like, what do you see? He's using every accessory muscle just to take a breath. He needs to be intubated immediately. And so he made the call right there because, yeah, I was using everything I could to breathe, you know? And so put an induced coma. They did a throat scope, saw that my trachea had shrunk down to the size of a drinking straw. And, then they put me on a course of steroids, anesthesia, morphine, and then they did another throat scope and they saw that my trachea was not swollen anymore. And they were like, well, it might be from the steroids shrinking the swelling, but I can't believe that would happen so soon. So they were like, well, you know, let's take him out of the coma. And I mean, he's fine. We don't need to do the surgery. And so they didn't. And then I transferred to another hospital and then I developed breathing problems again. And they were like, give him a trach right away. It was like, no questions asked, which was great that they did that. Now I could breathe, you know? Mm.
So were you struggling even after they said that you were doing okay? Were you struggling with it? With the breathing? Like when they said everything seemed fine?
Yeah, I mean, mind you, I was in a dense brain fog. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So my memory of this time is kind of like, yeah, I guess so. The thing is, I definitely had breathing problems when I transferred hospitals.
Mm.
And that's when they're like, he needs a trach immediately. And they did a tracheostomy underneath the occluded section so that I could breathe by bypassing that, like everything above it, you know?
Yes.
Which meant I couldn't breathe through my nose or anything of that sort.
Right. Right.
The interesting bit. So of course I couldn't talk either.
Yeah.
They did try putting in one of those valves
mm-hmm.
where you can push air through, but the fact is it was so occluded that doing so, I would just turn red trying to do that. So, it was very occluded. And, I mean, I go through the whole story and it goes in depth, into all this stuff. But
the swelling in the trachea, what was that from? Was it from your intubation? Like you were hooked?
I mean, I don't have a definitive answer on that, but I would assume so. And so a lot went into recovery beyond, like now that I had a trachea, I could breathe. I still couldn't walk. I couldn't talk. I couldn't eat conventionally because I had swallowing difficulties. So anytime I'd swallow, there was a risk of aspiration. Mm-hmm. I would usually aspirate, you know? And not only would I aspirate, but I wouldn't react to the fact that I was aspirating. So usually you cough it up.
Right.
They called it silent aspiration, mm-hmm. which is very dangerous.
Right.
Putting risk of serious infections.
Right.
You know, I want to talk about this because, all right, I couldn't eat conventionally.
Right.
And for patients that are unable to eat conventionally, the standard tube feedings consist of ingredients like corn syrup, soy protein, like corn maltodextrin.
Jevity.
Jevity, yes.
Yeah.
I
call them the poisons in the hospital. Yes.
Hey, we got to poison people that we're trying to get well, you know, it makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it? That's a whole nother tangent we could go on. And at the same time that this was going on, actually my aunt was getting into functional medicine. My aunt is a nurse practitioner.
Okay.
And she was like, he needs these nutrients. Like, she was asking her colleagues and figuring out what nutrients I needed and how to give my brain the best shot, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And so she actually asked a colleague. She was like, my nephew sustained a severe traumatic brain injury. Who should he see? And she lives in Houston. And her colleague also lived in Houston. Her colleague was like, well, if it was my loved one, I know exactly who I'd send him to. But he's in Austin. And little did she know, I was moving to Austin to live with my mother.
Mm.
At least that was the plan at that point. And that plan definitely panned out. But also what she did is she came and visited me. Actually, she came and visited me to see a presentation, a seminar mm-hmm. that had Dr. David Perlmutter in that seminar. And it's interesting that that Dr. Perlmutter was who my aunt went to see, because Dr. Perlmutter is now on the cover of my book.
Yes.
And
so people know, Perlmutter is the author of Grain Brain. And yeah. What is the other book he's written?
The Grain Brain Life Challenge and
something else with the brain he had written.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember the name. It's got the green tree on the
green tree. Yeah.
Yes.
I can't remember
it right now. But yes.
Yeah. So yeah, this is my book.
Yeah.
Here's Dr. Perlmutter right there.
Yep.
Might be backwards, I don't know. But
no, it's actually perfect, yes.
Cool. And yeah, as far as you asked me about doctors and practitioners respecting, you know, what me as a patient with zero credentials
mm-hmm.
has, and it kind of comes down to, as I was recovering, I told you that I was steered towards this functional doctor.
Yes.
He's a functional neurologist. His name is Dr. Thomas Culleton.
Mm-hmm.
So much love and respect for that man. And he basically did a blood test, saw that I had low protein levels, like certain amino acid levels were low. And I said, Doc, that doesn't make any sense. I eat meat with every meal. I have a protein shake every morning. Do you want me to eat more meat? And he's like, no, you're not absorbing the nutrients you're ingesting.
Yes.
And I was like, okay. He started telling me about leaky gut. And again, this was 2012. And I was very skeptical. I was like, I never heard of anything like that. But okay, you're the boss, and I vowed that if I don't get better, it is not going to be because I didn't try.
Yeah,
I was told. You know, I wasn't going to allow myself to look back with regrets. So, so I began the dietary protocol that he put me on, which was essentially a leaky gut protocol,
mm-hmm.
and he supplied He had me supply nutrients and supplements that would help to heal my gut lining while still supplying certain vitamins and minerals to my brain. And lo and behold, I started to regain clarity. And I was like, whoa, okay. Nutrition is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to see Dr. Culleton. And I said, yep, I'm in. Okay, so what do I do? Like, what do I do? What do I eat? And I was extremely compliant, if you want to use that word.
Let me stop you right there.
Sure.
Tell me, what was the difference? Like, when you say, I realized nutrition was a big deal, what exactly shifted in your brain? Like, mm-hmm. was it a clarity? Was it... did you feel a fog lift off, or did you feel like, hey, I'm able to remember things better? What is it? What is the shift that you saw?
So yeah, all of those things. But it's kind of like this. you don't know you're in a brain fog when you're in a brain fog.
Correct.
Because you're in a brain fog, right?
Yes.
And then as I began to come out of that brain fog, I began to write. And as I wrote, I was like, whoa, I'm beginning to be able to write clearly, like this is working, you know? The fog, and it didn't just like lift and like suddenly I see clearly now, you know? It's like,
yeah.
It was a process.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I emerged enough to see that I was in a fog, you know? And it's hard to describe exactly, you know? It's not necessarily measurable per se.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so as I regained some clarity, I it was just clear to me. It was like, well, the only thing that really changed is the nutrition. Or and then I tried introducing different things back into my diet. Mm-hmm. For example, I tried reintroducing corn, and it didn't work at that point, you know, and I just felt foggy again. And I was like, that doesn't work. And so really noticing and being able to see how diet affected my brain function, that's what did it for me. Just really noticing how things were changing when I chose different foods to supply my brain with. And again, I went to Dr. Colleton and I said, okay. So food matters. Nutrition's a big deal. What are the foods that are optimal for brain function? And he gave me a few things, but he basically was like, just don't eat this, don't eat this, don't eat this, don't eat this. It's like, cool. Those are the villains. I won't touch those. What are the heroes? And there wasn't really a resource out there that told me the nutrition for optimal brain function and repair. And so I was studying like my life depended on it, because it did. I was studying what nutrients were going to feed the cells of my brain and the cells of my body, honestly, because inflammation anywhere in your body is going to release cytokines, which are small enough to cross even a healthy blood-brain barrier and may inflame the brain. And when the brain's inflamed, communication with digestion is reduced. And that creates more intestinal permeability, and which allows, which creates more inflammation. And it's this vicious cycle.
So let me ask you this, having a background as a musician, how did you get and what did you get to read to understand a lot of the biochemistry and physiology and actually pathology? When we start talking about cytokines, we're really talking about the a defense mechanism and inflammation. How, what was your shift and where did you get that information from?
Sure. So again, I'm relearning how to walk.
Right.
But I have this amazing resource hooked up to my computer. It's called the internet. And in my book, I have, I put the acknowledgements and appreciation at the beginning of my book because it's so important. And in there, I actually say, this might sound silly, but I also want to thank the resource that is the internet.
Yeah.
Because it gave me the opportunity to research and to listen to podcasts and to watch videos and to have access to information from brilliant practitioners around the globe, right. Additionally, being able to actually reach out to them and communicate with them. So I was watching a TED talk at one point, and they were talking about Coursera, which is free online courses from top universities like Yale and Duke and Princeton and Cal Poly Tech and the University of Chicago. And actually, here, this is one of my favorite courses that I took. This is from the University of Chicago. This is Understanding the Brain, the Neurobiology of Everyday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so this is Dr. Peggy Mason, who I've done Facebook Lives with, and we've had her on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
But yes, so I began to take online courses from top universities, again, studying like my life depended on it, because as far as I was concerned, it absolutely did.
It did, yes.
And I needed to understand how the brain works, how the brain learns, and how the brain's fueled for optimal brain function.
Got it.
And when the brain's functioning optimally, it's repairing itself optimally. So I was taking physiology courses as well from Duke and other neuroscience courses. That was my job, you know, learn. That was it. That's what I was really focused on. And so that's, you know, I don't have credentials, because these online courses do not, you don't get a certain, well, you do, you get a certificate, but you don't get
a degree.
A degree, right. Yeah. So this is a certificate of accomplishment, right?
Yeah.
Like I've learned what I've learned.
Your brain has accomplishments.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you know, it's almost like I'm able to help people without fear of losing my license, because I don't have a license.
Yeah, that's true. Very, very true. You don't have a license. So basically, I mean, this is again coming down to who you were before, because most people, when they get a verdict, I call it a verdict, from a healthcare professional, for instance, something as simple as you got bulged discs, therefore you're going to always have chronic back pain. Someday you're going to need surgery. Mm-hmm. It goes into their heads. I got a bulged disc. I cannot lift. I cannot exercise. I cannot walk. They go into that spiral of I can't-tations, right? Mm-hmm. I cannot. But for you, instead, it was, I have to, and I can, and I should. And you went into a different, completely a different path. What gave you that impetus to say, you know, I got to do, is it because you saw results by working with a functional medical practitioner, or it was like, you know, you felt like, I cannot live this way? What was your push in the direction, like you decided, I'm not going to be helpless with what the medical professionals are telling me. I just got to do something for myself.
That's, I really like how you talked about this. I can't miss. What it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, I've been told that whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
You're right.
Right. It was, you know, it wasn't exactly easy. It was part of doing the research and looking into everything I could do. And I must say that the initial drive came from my friends. Mm-hmm. I had friends that were at the hospital every day playing cards with me, even though I couldn't speak, right? And like, honestly, like I would pee into a bottle and they'd empty it. Like, good friends that were really just so helpful. And I was like, you know, I'm going to get better for them. Mm. You know, they were there for me. I need to be able to be there for them. And so that was the initial drive. And also I've been really thinking a lot about your question, because it goes deep. It goes very deep into psyche and upbringing and things of that sort. And I grew up in a very competitive environment, and I must say it very much served me in that place. Mm-hmm. Because I was going to, come out victorious, you know, like, it no longer serves me to be competitive. And I'm actually writing about that quite a bit, but I am much more interested in cooperation and clarity than competition. And, and fear. And there was a lot of fear behind me being so active to heal myself. And it was helpful. It's not always helpful, but it was helpful at that point to keep me going. And this whole, I can, and I'm going to, mm-hmm. and then finding the strength outside of myself at first, that's not enough to drive the whole way, though.
Right.
That was enough to get me to one point to where I found a purpose within myself. And that's what drove me to go the rest of the way and go to the extra mile and not just recover, but then to help others to bring about the best possible outcomes for themselves and their loved ones.
Right. So from the time that this injury happened, you said it was 2012 or 2011. 2011. When was the time that you felt like, have you ever felt that you're normal or even better than normal? You're normal.
What is normal?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, people often ask like, so when did you recover 100%? I'm like, oh, I haven't recovered 100%. I've recovered QX397%. Because it's a whole different scale. You know, I'm no longer...
It's a new normal. It's actually a new normal. This is a new person with new skills.
There you go.
But where you feel like, you know, I have a completely a new world has opened to me, and this is where I have a purpose in life. Because what you had prior to going into the accident was, I don't know what your purpose was at that time. Did you have a goal and purpose, and is it different now?
Absolutely. Right. Hugely different. I mean, the person I was before I actually refer to before my accident as my past life.
Yeah.
I am absolutely a different person. I mean, I'm the same person in many ways, and right. I have learned so many lessons from the person of my past life, and I've carried over plenty of the characteristics that I enjoy from my past life, and I really like that guy from my past life. It's just that I am so appreciative that I now have the opportunity to influence the world in a much more positive way, you
right.
know?
Right.
And that's another aspect of, like, I wake up every morning with deep appreciation, with an enormous amount of appreciation for everything that in my life. Thinking about your question about better than before, somebody asked me, you know, like, do you feel like that that the event has been good in the long run in any way, or that I've gained some abilities that I didn't have before? And I was like, yeah, you mean my superpowers? You know, because honestly, there is no way I could be having the influence that I'm able to have at this point if not for this injury. And of course, because I have this ability, like, with an ability comes responsibility.
Yes.
And I have this responsibility to really do something powerful and positive with this ability to write, to talk, to speak, to express my thoughts and what I learn, and to learn what I can, and to influence, you know, hospital nutrition and neuro rehabilitation. It's my mission mm-hmm. to improve the current model of neurorehabilitation. And that's been my, that became my understood mission. I believe in 2012, possibly 2013, when I realized that's what I'm going to do, because I saw that what I was doing was working, and this was not part of the standard medical.
Yes.
And clearly, I think nutrition is a big deal. Yet we are feeding people in the hospital setting who are not able to eat conventionally corn syrup and canola oil.
Right.
And I mean, this is like, so it's become, okay, I need to change. I want to improve neurorehabilitation, which means we need to change hospital nutrition in general.
Right.
And part of my mission is to improve, and I realize we're going up against some big, you know, David and Goliath type deal, where it's like Nestle and Abbott Labs, right?
Right.
But I think it's so important to make a change in what we're doing, and to do so, to show that it's financially beneficial in the long run.
So let me ask you this. Have you done any research on the impact of, or do you know of any research on the impact of Jevity and Ensure and, you know, all of these pre-made so-called high protein drinks that right. they provide in the hospital? Have you come across those research on nerve cells or brain cells?
I can't say I've seen studies specifically looking at that. I would love to see or to help to bring about some of those studies.
Right.
That's all part of the huge vision for what right. I'm trying to do. Is getting peer reviewed research done, and right. And making this really a viable means so that everybody can start utilizing a better practice in medicine.
Right. No, absolutely. I think the whole foods moving away from all the processed foods, and unfortunately the hospital is probably a mecca for processed foods of all kinds, for the staff as well as for the patients, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult. I've seen patients even ordering, even if they have a choice, they don't want the healthier choice because it's what they're used to. And this is not something we talk about. So right now, what is your mission, actually? If you were to define your mission, what is your mission?
It's a big question. Yeah, broad question. So I'm going to give it kind of a broad answer. But okay. My mission is to positively influence the most lives in the greatest way possible by utilizing my unique perspective and by attracting the right players that can bring about this sort of change and improvement in order to touch, you know, hopefully billions of lives.
So do you think your target, the people who you would really like to help, will be from the patient standpoint or from a practitioner standpoint? Who would you actually both?
And I mean, absolutely. And I mean, if we're from a practitioner standpoint, that's exponential. And so that's absolutely needed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love working with survivors and loved ones of those with brain injury. I currently consult with loved ones who are who have a loved one in a hospital setting, often in a coma. And I have a 100% success in coaching them to speak with their medical team in order to implement better feeds and high dose omega-3s.
Very nice.
Been shown in research to be so beneficial,
right,
with almost no possible side effects, you know.
Right. Side effects. Right.
And there is this concern of blood thinning.
Right.
So I also, which actually is gathered from studies that really aren't very well done.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a study that's done. You know, I'm trying to find this page that I created, where it's called, what's it called when you have several different studies and it
meta-analysis.
It's a meta-analysis of several different studies, and it basically comes down to like omega-3s do not affect platelet aggregation, even with warfarin or other blood thinners.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yep. It's pretty cool to be able to present this.
Right.
And you know, for as far as the practitioners go, I give them the research so that either way they look at the research and they're like, well, you know, I'm covered. If they come after me, I have a full, like, I have an explanation for
right.
why I said that why this was my call and why I was okay with this.
Right.
And so it kind of covers them because, again, a lot of it's so fear-based.
Right.
As far as, like, I can't do that because if it doesn't work, I'm going to lose everything. You know, I'm
right.
going to get sued and all this stuff.
Right.
So, so being able to release that liability has been very powerful.
Right. Yeah. Whenever you are going against standard medical practice, with the guidelines, you have to have a lot of backing. You have to be able to stand up in the court of law. Now, for you, like you said, that's your biggest advantage. You don't have a license to lose. You're giving advice. I'm sure you have a contract that you sign with people that they understand that you're not a medical practitioner and this is really something that you've done of your own accord. Whereas somebody like me, if I give advice, I have to be able to back up my claims mm-hmm. in a medical court of law, especially mm-hmm. if I go against standard medical guidelines.
Right.
So, you know, that's where the fine line comes. That's why people like you are a great advantage for the medical community, because if I don't want to do something, I can say, you know what, I know the guy you should be talking to, and you might get a lot of input from them.
That's exactly right.
Right. So there's a certain advantage to that. So to people who are listening to you, and I know brain health, it doesn't matter what your injury be, whether it be a subdural, a subarachnoid is worse, but thankfully mm-hmm. a subdural is, you know, a little better. It's just pressure on the outside. But whether it be a traumatic brain injury, whether it be, whether it be a stroke, what we have learned, which we did not know in the past, was the neuroplasticity of the brain, the fact that it can make new connections and you just need to train it just a little longer than the rest of the body that can regenerate very fast. So mm-hmm. for somebody who is struggling with this, where would they begin? Let's say they have an injury or they're struggling with it. Where can they find the best in the kitchen? What do you think are the essentials they need to have? And are there specific supplements you recommend without, let's say they don't have the money to go see a doctor and get tested?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that they can start off at home? And so where would you say they should begin?
Absolutely. I think, again, we want to supply the brain with the nutrients for optimal brain function. Number one, I would recommend DHA is probably the most powerful supplement for our brain. Not DHEA, but DHA.
Okay.
In fact, I am just about to launch the first Feed a Brain supplement,
mm-hmm.
which is a high dose omega-3, a high DHA omega-3 from cold water, fatty fish,
yeah.
Very well sourced And it's a fantastic supplement. I'm so excited for it. And yeah, so DHA is extremely important for quelling inflammation. That in conjunction with EPA really quell inflammation in the brain.
Yes.
And it is a phosphatide precursor to synaptogenesis,
mm-hmm.
which is what we're talking about with plasticity. We have a neuron, and then the axon comes off, and then that axon synapses with another neuron cell body through the dendrites. And between the dendrite and the axon is this little space called the synaptic cleft.
Mm-hmm.
That's the synapse. That's where the synapse happens. That's where communication between neurons occurs. And it's super, super important, because when we make connections, we make connections. We are rewiring the brain. And so we want to support the building of the building blocks for the brain to do that. DHA is a phosphatide precursor to that. So is choline. I like to use citicoline, mm-hmm. Or CDP choline. I like to supplement with that. And I like to eat foods that are high in choline, specifically egg yolks, and organ meats are very high in choline as well.
Yep.
But most people are more into eggs than they are organ meats. And it's not the egg whites, it's the egg yolk that has the choline. So I actually, for a while, I didn't really tolerate egg whites very well. And I would separate the egg and eat only the yolk,
mm-hmm.
because that's where the choline is. And it's a really cost-effective way to get a lot of really great
concentrated
choline from a dietary source that's still a whole food. Well, almost whole food. You got rid of the blood.
Yeah.
So, choline is also great. Uridine monophosphate is another phosphatide precursor to synaptogenesis that I incorporate. Uridine is found in broccoli and beets and organ meats and meats and fish. However, it looks like uridine in the food sources doesn't increase uridine in the blood,
mm-hmm.
unless you supplement with uridine monophosphate.
Okay.
And so I tend to supplement with some uridine monophosphate along with eating egg yolks and supplementing with citicoline and supplementing with high DHA omega-3s. And you can learn more about these phosphatide precursors to synaptogenesis at feedabrain.com/synapto. That's S-Y-N-A-P-T-O.
Okay.
Short for synaptogenesis.
We'll put those links in our notes from your website.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's Feed A Brain.
Feed the brain
or feed your brain. Everybody does that.
Yeah.
Feed a brain, any old brain.
Yeah.
So some other things we can do that actually I didn't write about in the book, but that later came to my attention and that I've been practicing and really like is phosphatidylserine,
mm-hmm.
Phosphatidylcholine again is found in egg yolks, but phosphatidylserine is a fantastic supplement.
Yes.
Good. And so if you go to my website, there's a shop that has some brain nutrients that I find to be really powerful to rebuild the brain and to build the brain. I mean, either way, we're doing the same thing, whether we're learning or repairing our brain, we're using the same nutrients. We're still building the brain.
Right. Right. So before we wrap up, did you have any nutritional questions that you wanted to ask him?
Yeah, so I liked what you said about you had this list of things that you should not eat, but there was no list of what you should eat. Mm-hmm. So I think we even have a lot of our clients who struggle with that. We give them this huge list of all the stuff that you can, and then they're like, well, this looks like everything that I eat normally, so what is left? Exactly. So in terms of getting in the kitchen, what would you say are like the three foods you're like, hey, I got to eat this every day or at least weekly to help for brain repair? And this isn't even just for people with TBIs or anything like that or brain damage. But even brain fog, I think everybody has that at this point.
I know.
Right. So, number one, greens, dark leafy greens. Basically, I teach brain injury survivors as well. And the line I tell them is food that almost never goes bad, almost never goes good.
Yeah.
Get food that's going to spoil and eat it before it does. So dark leafy greens are a perfect example. They're not going to last very long in your fridge without getting all gross. So eat them before they get all gross, right? And it's also like keeps you on eating those. So dark leafy greens, I just go and buy the pre-washed, box or whatever of leafy greens. And that's the base of almost every one of my meals is greens, right? And then having vegetables like cruciferous vegetables, sulfur rich vegetables, so broccoli, cauliflower, and then radishes. I'm blanking here. I don't know why.
Cabbage,
cabbage, broccoli.
Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts. Thank
you. Got the whole list.
Yep. So all those cruciferous vegetables, extremely important. And then dark, deeply pigmented vegetables and fruits. And people are like, what do you think about fruits? And I'm like, it doesn't really matter. Did you know that cucumbers are a fruit?
Yeah. Carrots are a fruit.
Avocado.
Right?
Avocado, fruit. Yeah. Tomatoes are fruit.
Yep. Olives are fruit.
Yep.
And so it doesn't matter whether they're a fruit or vegetable. Like, that's how we talk about using them in cooking. That has nothing to do with our health. What has to do with our health is, A, the color. And how much color is in the fruit or vegetable? Because when a fruit or vegetable is deeply pigmented, it really has an abundance of antioxidants and phytonutrients that we don't get in too many other places besides nutrient-dense fruits and vegetables.
Right.
Yep. And so those would and the thing about the color, the deeply pigmented, is this is also where we'll get most of our carbs is through this. And so we want to be kind of careful. So I made a list, a guide, a nutritional guide, full color PDF that you can print out. That lists the colored fruits and vegetables and their total carbs, their fiber, net carbs on there. So you can see and decide like what's going to be most useful for you, those three plus organ meats, let's talk about what's in the fridge at all times. So at all times I have the greens, and then I also have the coloreds and the sulfurs. I usually chop those up in like inch sized cubes and I roast those. Mm-hmm. And I do them in big old batches and roast some vegetables and fruits, roasted fruits.
What? Yeah. Yeah, I haven't heard about this. This is new.
Hey, when you can have apple pie, why not?
Again, Again, fruits are avocados and olives and carrots. I didn't know carrots are fruit.
No, it's actually a root vegetable. So
I roast up that, and I'll throw that on top of greens and then add meat of some sort. And that's the a high quality fat and oil, which you can download at my site as well, Guide to Fats and Oils. And I'll just throw that on there, and that's most of my meals are that way.
So you're feeding two brains by that, the gut as well as the brain.
Absolutely.
Right.
The thing with organ meat too is they're very concentrated nutritionally, so you really only need a very little amount to go a long way. So you have your vegetables as the base, and then you can top off with some organ meats. That's awesome.
Yeah, and if you're doing organ meats, like you said, you don't need much. I like to measure in fist size because well, who carries around a measuring? I mean, I don't use a measuring cup.
But usually, actually, you're very right. In Ayurveda, the amount of food per meal is two fistfuls. Ah. That's the amount you're supposed to eat, no matter what.
Ayurvedic medicine.
You're so cool. This much food.
Just this two of these.
I don't know if it's going in your mouth or on your cheek.
Two fists.
Two fists.
Tagline for us.
I like it. So, yes.
So, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So just to ask you, what would be your, what would you like to end with this with? Like for those, I think a lot of people who go into the hospital setting or who have been given a verdict of some kind, hey, this is what you're going to be struggling with. I think what I got out of this is, number one, you have to have the desire, if not a competitive desire, but just the desire to feel good again.
Mm-hmm. Or an aunt who's going to tell you that you're going to feel good. Yeah. See this doctor.
Somebody too. Yes. I think the youth was also your, your surrounding. People encouraged you. Number two is you have to lead your care. And a lot of times we want other people to lead our care just because they have a degree for that. And what would be the other thing that you would say?
Well, I pause you on the lead your care. That is so imperative to be in charge of your own care.
Yes.
That's absolutely how you need to treat things. It's you that's in charge.
Right.
And the second you give your power away,
yes,
or you are asking, hey, is this okay for this to happen? I work with clients and help them to step into that power and recognize that, like, as far as the tenets of medical ethics state that the patient autonomy is one of the first ones on there. I think it's the first one, actually. And that means if you approach your doctor and you're like, I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
How can we make that happen?
Right.
As opposed to, is it okay if we do this? Like, there's a difference there,
yes,
right?
Yes.
One, they absolutely have the opportunity to say no. And the other, they have the opportunity to say, let me think, how can we do that, right?
Yes.
So being in charge of your own care and stepping up to the calling, recognizing that, like, whatever happened, wallowing about it isn't going to get you anywhere.
Right.
Right? And this
wallow for a minute.
Yeah, definitely. Dude, I mean, don't get me wrong. I definitely spent some time.
Yes.
Wallowing, and I'm recognizing this isn't going to get me anywhere.
Right.
And choosing to accept where you are. But acceptance isn't giving up and no longer trying. Acceptance is being like, okay, the way it is right now is the way it is right now.
Right. Yeah.
And there's nothing I can do about the way it is right now. But what I do right now can change the future.
Right.
Making that recognizing that, that's another powerful aspect of taking charge of your recovery and being in a place where you're able to do so.
Right. Good. And so the takeaway points, besides being making sure, I really think the bigger thing also is having a great partnership with your doctor. Find the right provider who will actually do 100% partnership. They are 100%, you are 100%, rather than they being dogmatic and you just having to follow the lead. And making sure you lead your care. And number three is, when you're feeding your brain, nutrition is a huge part of your recovery, I think, from any disease process, because the basis of all disease is inflammation and your immune system. So just making sure your nutrition is adequate is very important. Is there any other parting words that you would tell people, you know, in terms of, we'll definitely link to where they can find you and what to know.
Yes, I understand you have a pretty, you have a very practitioner-oriented audience, and I love working with practitioners and connecting with practitioners and seeing how we can help people the most, you know, how we can be, create a powerful partnership for the patient's well-being. Right. So I absolutely would love anybody watching this to reach out to me. My email is kavin@feedabrain.com. Probably quicker. I mean, this is on Facebook, so I'm probably quicker to respond on Facebook.
That's right. Yeah.
If you want to hit me up there, that works. And either on my page, Feed a Brain, or Adventures in Brain Injury, both those pages. And I have a podcast.
Okay.
It's the Adventures in Brain Injury podcast, where I interview some of the most influential and inspirational and just brilliant practitioners and researchers and people out there about my favorite subject, which is the brain.
Brain. Were you going to ask a question?
I was just going to point out for anybody who is listening to this and is emailing Kavin, C-A-V-I-N, which I would have never guessed.
Yes.
So I think we do need to point that out. But yeah, for practitioners as well as people who are just interested in recovering from a brain injury, family of those or anyone who is just like, hey, I want my brain to work better. Your book, How to Feed a Brain, is a good resource. Adventures in Brain Injury. I'm sorry, you're going to have to say that.
Yeah, you got it.
Adventures in Brain Injury.com. Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
And I like that title.
And FeedaBrain.com.
Yep.
All right. Hit them up.
Yes.
Hit me up.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed your whole story. And you know, there's a lot that people can learn from this. So thank you once again.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Holistic Icon Podcast. Subscribe for the podcast and leave us a review on iTunes or visit holisticicon.com to listen to past episodes. Want to take control of your health and live a life of wellness? Dr. Chellum's best-selling book, Transform Your Thyroid, teaches you how to overcome fatigue, depression, weight gain, and more, and is available on amazon.com.